Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda in South Pasadena, California, and I have my co-host on the line, Mary Maxim. Good morning, Mary.
Hi, how are you, Leslie?
I'm great. It's full-fledged summer, and it's hard to believe.
That's for sure. It's kind of lazy, hazy days of summer. It's kind of hot, and everybody's slowing down, I think, but some regular painting days, so that's good for me.
I have to say, Mary, the last few paintings that I've seen you post on Facebook have been unbelievable. There was one, that one called Contemplation of the, I know you do a lot of fishermen, but that is stunning. And then the one called, is it called Grackle? The bird that you did?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I caught that on the Bighorn River in Montana, and it was such a stark shot, but I really enjoyed it with that beady eye kind of looking out at you. So, yeah, I enjoyed a couple birds. The heron I did as well recently. So, yeah, I enjoyed all those. And your embroidering and painting and at
yes.
UCI and all different things.
It's been crazy. You know, I was very inspired by Rick Aguilera, who was our guest.
You got
and
your video up. I saw it. It's gorgeous.
I did. You know, he was our guest on the show, and last time he was on the show, he did the exact same thing. He talked about how YouTube is such a powerful way to expand your brand. And so I did a video with my intern. She gets a lot of credit for the webinars program I'm launching in September. And that was really, really wonderful. I'm also starting a vlog, V-L-O-G.
Really?
And it's called My Life as an Artist. And basically, you know, I get emails every week from artists wondering how I get so much done, and, you know, when it comes to painting and teaching and marketing my work. And I don't think I accomplish any more than any other artist. I just really like to multitask.
I'm not sure I
so,
can agree on that one.
Well, My Life as an Artist, it's kind of like it's my chance to share every week, you know, my life as an artist.
Yeah,
and I'll share a quick video about me, share my house, my studio, my art, my projects, my marketing ideas. And hopefully it'll be worthy and interesting, but it's kind of a way of inviting everybody into my life.
Excellent.
And it's going to be fun. So Rick gets all the credit for inspiring, because I hadn't really thought about vlogging, but I think it's really important.
Well, I have to say, you've got a lot going on, but that'll be great. I'll look forward to seeing your updates on that. I like your first video. It works wonderfully. It really
thank you.
It really overview of that whole you know, the new webinars coming up, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm very excited. And I have to say, a couple of friends of mine inspired me to reach out to some artists to get them to be guests on the AHA show, as is our guest Frank Serrano today. And I was able to confirm yesterday and this morning Tony Pro, David Chevlino, Carol Carter, and Brian Blood.
Amazing. You must have been. Oh, that's great.
I haven't heard back yet from Richard Smith, but I'm still waiting.
Yay.
But I asked.
Wow.
But no, I'm excited. And I really want to introduce our guest today. Contemporary landscape artist Frank Serrano. He was born here in L.A. I won't say what year because he's younger than me, which really is frustrating. He developed an early interest in art and nature, studying throughout his school days, but he's largely self-taught. And his natural talent eventually gained him a lucrative career as a freelance commercial artist. And then in the early 1990s, he decided to pursue his passion for traditional oil painting. And since has developed a strong following of admirers, both nationally and internationally. If you're not following Frank Serrano on Facebook, you need to, because it's probably every two or three days, maybe even every day, I see a new, stunning, incredible painting come up on his page, which is amazing. Frank travels, you know, all throughout North America, painting scenes from the desert southwest to the beautiful far reaches of the Alaskan wilderness. But I think his hallmark is his unique talent for capturing the hazy atmospheric mood characteristic of the West. And his seascapes are absolutely stunning. And there's a great quote that Frank, I found about Frank on his website. It says, "Painting on location enriches my life, and the paintings do not exist as mere pictures, but as a journal through which I can express all my senses." And although the majority of his paintings are done a la prima on location, he also works in his studio creating larger paintings from his outdoor sketches. So I know Frank believes the only way to learn to paint is from life. So Frank, welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on the show, and it's always fun to introduce you and see all those really great things about someone who has as much talent as you do. It's unbelievable.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, I always like to start out just finding out how long you've been an artist. And I know your career path took you from after art school classes to commercial art to airbrushing, typography, screen painting, and eventually plein air painting. So we'd love to hear kind of how your art career progressed.
Well, sure. You know, it started at birth.
Wow.
You've been painting
for a long time.
I've been drawing all my life, and some of the earliest stuff that I can remember seeing, like if I go to my mom's house, you know, it'll have my age on there, like 3 years old, you know. So I've been into art and drawing, and she has some really nice ones from way back then that later, hopefully, maybe if I ever do a book, I can, you know, put those things in a book, kind of nice for people to see. But, I've been drawing all my life, and every business or every thing that I've been involved in was related to art. So early on in my career, you know, right out of school, basically, I started working in the printing industry, actually. And then a lot of these clients that I had needed illustration work. So then I jogged over to the illustration side and started doing more and more of that. But I never really wanted to work for anybody. That was my thing. I always wanted to do my own thing. Mm. So eventually I started a screen printing business in my early 20s and ran that for quite a long time. And it was commercial screen printing, so we did a variety of stuff. And some of it kind of crossed over into the movie industry. And then all of a sudden now I'm working with people in the movie industry, and I'm getting my hands involved in, doing a lot of art related to the movie industry. So it kind of went along, and sign painting and all this, airbrushing went along with all of that. So I always, and I love trying different things. So getting into that was really exciting for me. And I met some really great people along the way, and I'm still friends with these people and work with these people now.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then how did you make the transition finally into plein air painting and fine art?
Well, that one of my friends who I used to airbrush with loved oil painting, and he had a friend who was in a gallery up in Carmel. And so we used to go visit up there and go to the galleries and stuff, and I thought, I could do this. You know, this is beautiful stuff, and I could see the collectors going in there, and you see what they're getting for their art, and you're like, wow, you know. So eventually he and I started plein air painting. We started going out on little trips ourselves. And we took our makeshift equipment. We didn't even have shod boxes or anything like we have now. We just took, like, you know, a tripod easel with a little toolbox with our paints and brushes and things like that, and just went along the coast mostly because we lived near the coast, and it was really exciting to be there at the beach. So that's mostly what we did, all the way up to Oregon and then back down. And that's pretty much what got me into it. And so I was still pretty young at that time. I was still in my 20s, and so I was really happy to make that transition. Eventually, it took a while, but it was well worth it.
How did you end up getting in your first gallery? I mean, did they approach you? Did you approach them?
To be honest, I don't remember. I think I probably approached them because at the time nobody knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
I would go into galleries with my friends. We would, be in awe at all the art that we saw, especially the early California Impressionists. And of course, most of those galleries didn't accept living artists. There are a couple that do, but at the time we weren't even ready for that. It took a while. I would say it took about 5 or 6 years of painting before I eventually got into a gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure I probably went in there with my work and said, take me, stuff like that.
Well, obviously it paid off. Good for you.
Yeah, it did. It certainly did. And hi, Frank, this is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
you know, Leslie just mentioned the atmosphere in your paintings, and that must be a great part of your signature style, is getting that beautiful atmosphere in your landscape. So do you have favorite plein air painting spots that you go to for repeated, I'll say, inspiration, or is it just all over the place? Or
For me, the whole atmosphere started, that thing started with one of my favorite artists, early California Impressionists, was Sam Hyde Harris. And Sam Hyde Harris lived in the San Gabriel Valley area, and he painted a lot of scenes like that. So when I saw those and that he painted them around here, the direction that I wanted to go with painting went that way. He painted a lot of backlit scenes, a lot of hazy scenes, and to me it evoked, you know, it sparked this this love, this emotion in me, and I'm like, I gotta paint that. So I started looking around the landscapes when I would go and figure out what times of day I would get that. And usually in the early morning, which a lot of painters are not crazy about painting in the early morning.
You're talking early morning.
They want to paint the late afternoon with all the color, but I'm more of a tonalist, I would say, and I love the haze and the atmosphere, and you're going to get more of that in the morning. I go down to the beach sometimes. I can kind of look out my window. I can see the coast from my window. I still live kind of far from the beach, but I can see all the way down to the beach because I live on a hill. And I can tell if it's going to be, if there's going to be some atmosphere, some moisture in the air, and I'll take off. Or sometimes I just look out just locally and I can see that it's pretty hazy. So I'll grab my gear and just run out.
Yeah, well, wonderful. And then do you paint alone with other artists? Do you have a schedule to your day, or do you just sort of go, yep, I've got to get out there and go when you can?
I think the latter. Yep.
Okay.
Got to get out there and just go.
Yeah.
I love painting with other painters. I really do. I love the camaraderie. But it's not, you know, we all have our own idea of what we want to do.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes, unless you plan a trip, you know, like, let's go to the Sierras or let's go to the Southwest. Unless we plan a trip like that, it usually doesn't happen. I'm usually alone. I can call a couple local painters, and if they're not doing anything, you know, sometimes they tag along. But for the most part, I just go alone. And it's easier that way, too, because you could just go to the spot, get your painting done, and then get back on the road.
You know, I read something on your website that intrigued me. It said that you were a painting consultant for Walt Disney Studios. What is that?
Not anymore. I haven't done that in probably a couple of years now. But I had a one-man show. I think it was in 2006. And it was attended, very well attended. And some of the guys that showed up were from Disney, and they really liked that atmospheric style that I had and what I was doing. So they, with the gallery owner, they coordinated a time, a meeting for all of us to meet at the gallery, and they wanted to talk to me about my paintings and what I was doing. And eventually that led to them asking me to come over to Disney to consult on a movie that they were going to be doing in 3D, because their movies at the time, their 3D movies, were very it was like if they had the backgrounds, for instance, with trees and stuff, they would put every leaf on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to loosen up. They wanted to loosen up, and they liked the atmosphere. So that they brought me in to do some brush strokes and things like that and show them how I did that. And so they actually kept me on for a little while and then decided that they could use me in their Disney Academy, which they used to have. They don't when the economy kind of took a tank, they decided to cut back, so they got rid of the Disney Academy, which basically was new recruits that came from art school, came into Disney and tried it, and would, pardon me?
Now I understand what you're saying. So you were a consultant and advisor to these folks.
Yeah, the new recruits would come in, they would be on probation for like 6 months, and I would teach them painting and drawing. And it would be just like on a weekly basis. They would call me up. They'd go, can you come this week? You know, and I did that sort of thing for a couple of years. Yeah.
What a great experience.
Yeah.
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. Yeah. I mean, I could tell you a quick little story.
Please
do. My dad, Well, when I was in high school, I got a lot of awards in high school for art, and my dad always wanted me to work in that industry, and he said, you know, you should go to Disney, you should do this. I really didn't want to work for anybody. I think I told you that earlier. I kind of just wanted to do my own thing, so I never did. So when they hired me, actually, I called my dad, and I told him, hey, you know, it's come full circle. Now they wanted me to come over there. So kind of a cool story, and he was proud.
And he's telling you father always knows best, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, they certainly chose the right person. So in doing that, you've had a varied career, but it's been, you know, all directed toward art. Was there any particular turning point that you decided, yes, I must go through to the fine arts, as you're saying, as far as the painting? Was it strictly visiting those galleries and getting outside more?
Well, I think it was kind of a bunch of things.
Okay.
And first and foremost was being in business was very, it takes a lot of time, takes a lot out of you. I was working a lot of hours getting my business going. And it was a very good business, but at the same time it became very monotonous and very, like, you know, cutthroat in the industry.
Yeah.
So I decided, do I really want to do this for the rest of my life? And since I had that ability to do my art and I did all the artwork for my business, I thought, you know, I'm just going to, like, shift gears here and start doing the fine art. So I started doing that at night, actually, after work. So I'd be up till all hours of the night doing paintings. And then it got to the point where I was eventually starting to sell a few of them. So I thought, hey, I could do something with this. And then I just made that transition.
Have you always painted kind of seascapes and landscapes and everything since you've been oil painting?
Yeah, you know, seascapes were kind of an easy thing because I always lived by the beach.
Got it.
In Newport Beach, down Laguna area, and so it was so easy to go down there and just sit on the coast. It's nice and cool, and just I love painting rocks, so there's plenty of rocks and cliffs. And, you know, the subject matter was pretty much endless. As soon as I drove inland, I really didn't know where I was going. You don't know what it's going to look like with the hills and stuff. You have to do a little bit more exploring. It takes more time. So I ended up going to the coast a lot. So I started out doing a lot of that. And then, but I like all kinds of art. I love figurative work. I actually do draw and paint the figure, but I do it for my own practice and to keep my skills honed. And then I love urban scenes, so I paint a lot of urban scenes. I just got back from San Francisco painting up there with a friend of mine, Andre Nobrega. We were up there painting scenes of the Golden Gate and some of the streets there, like Lombard and all that, all those good, fun-looking, you know, views.
Awesome of those. They have amazing perspective on them. They're great views.
They are wonderful. But I guess, you know, we could probably do a show every week on finding your signature style and have every artist on the planet listen to it, because that's the question and the comment I get all the time. How do you find your signature style? And I'm assuming, like, correct me if I'm wrong, that you're kind of known for your capturing of light on a hazy day.
Uh-huh.
Did that happen naturally? Is that something that you just figured out as you were painting that you liked? How did you kind of come to define that as your favorite thing to paint?
Wow. I think that it just evolved that way. I've always been, like I said, I love more tonal qualities in paintings, and I love light more than I'm attracted to so much color. You know, when I was earlier on, when I had my business before and I worked in the movie industry and did a lot of commercial art, I did lots of stuff with color because it was all about color and light and mood and all that. But I really liked tonal qualities in paintings, close values and things like that. I thought, wow, you know, to get, when you're traveling on a trip, like if I'm in Canada and I'm looking down a mountain range and you see like 7 or 8 mountain ranges and you see all those values, that excited me. That really got me going more so than, oh, look at the pretty poppies on the side of the road. You know, they're colorful and pretty, but it didn't get, there was no mood in it to me like there is when you see those levels of atmosphere in a landscape. So I kind of just shifted that way and eventually just, you know, did a lot of my work based on mood and light more than color.
It reminds me of a conversation I had with Deborah Hughes one time, and I said, because we were talking about painting in color versus painting in more of the tonal qualities. And I said, you know, when, she says, yeah, most artists start out painting in color and bright colors, and then you get tired of it. And then you move over to the tonal qualities. And I was like, wow, I think she's right.
Well, you have to paint what you love. You know, you really do. And
very true.
If it was all about money, I'd be painting color in red all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not that. I'd rather somebody fall in love with the piece because it reminds them of a time, a place in time, rather than I'm buying that because they're pretty red roses or they're
mm-hmm.
pretty whatever.
Right.
I like when people say, it reminds me of this, or it reminds me of when I was on a vacation with my husband. Or,
mm-hmm.
And most of my paintings sell that way. It reminds them of something. I posted one of my San Francisco scenes, and somebody recently was wanting to purchase that and said they love San Francisco. It reminded them of their trip to San Francisco. And they didn't say, I love the red Golden Gate. Or, you know,
yeah.
it wasn't about the color. So,
right.
That's why I love to paint. I just love the moods. And it makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it. All your work just evokes a mood so well that people can relate to. You know, they have been there, and I think you really capture that well. So, okay, moving on a little bit. Generally, what advice do you have for other artists on a variety of things, maybe selling, finding their voice, staying motivated, all those kinds of things? What kinds of advice do you give to other artists, say in workshops or generally?
Well, there's so much. But I think first and foremost is paint what you love. Paint what moves you, because it's going to move someone else. If it moves you, it's going to move someone else. Don't paint for the almighty dollar.
Mm-hmm.
That'll never work. You're just chasing it. You're copying somebody else's style because you know it sells. That just never works out.
Uh-huh.
It might work out for like, you know, very short period of time, but then you're found out. So I don't think that really, you know, just always do what you love to do. And that's what I've done with my career. I enjoyed every step of the way, but I've evolved and then finally became an artist because I really love to do that. And they say, I mean, if you love what you do, you know, the money will come. So you
mm-hmm.
just have to be patient too. I think a lot of the new artists are impatient. They're I'm asked all the time, how'd you get in that gallery? How'd you get in this gallery? I'm like, well, if I look at their work, they're clearly not even ready. And
Right. So
just be patient and study and, you know, hone your skills. And then finally it'll happen. Because even early on in my career when I was in a gallery, collectors would come up to me in the gallery and say, oh, I love your work. It's improving. And
you
kind of like, improving?
You're supposed to say great.
The reason why I say that is because collectors are savvy. Collectors are savvy. They're not going to buy your work right off the bat. They're going to watch your career.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to watch you evolve. And finally, when you get to that point, they're going to go, God, I better start buying his work now. You know, and that's how it's happened for. It's how it's happened for me. So, but just go out and paint as much as you can. Paint from life. You know, whether it's you're doing a still life in your backyard or going out painting in nature, because when you do that, you just improve tremendously. A lot of artists, I'm a plein air painter mostly, so I go out and paint. I also have a certain time limit that I have to get that painting done because the sun is moving across the sky. It's changing
mm-hmm.
everything. So I feel that has helped me too, because it's given me a time limit to these things. There's no like, oh, I'm going to set up a still life in my house and I'll work it for 5 minutes here and then go do something else and then come back to it. You're forced to get this work done. And so there's a lot of hard work involved.
A lot of practice.
So
Frank,
how
do you sell your art? I know you're in galleries. Do you also sell from your website, through
Facebook? That's evolved too, the way I sell my work. Because early on, I thought galleries were really cool, like kind of like museums, and you had to be really good, and you were in there. I was friends with a lot of great artists early on that I haven't seen in quite a long time, but
mm-hmm.
I admired them, and their work was in the gallery, and I thought, wow, they must be, you know, really high up there, kind of like being an actor. They're that top 2% that I want to get to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought being in a gallery was the way to do it. And I think galleries are a very important part to what we do. They provide that audience for us that we might not necessarily have. It's changed, though. I mean, now with the social media, people just like Facebook or whatever other thing you're on, more and more people see that. Collectors see that. Even the galleries are on it now, some of the galleries.
Yes.
But I still think you need the galleries because there's also people that aren't on that social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our demographic for people that buy paintings could be from 40 years old to like 70 or 80 or what. And so a lot of those older folks aren't on the computers. But they're still going into the galleries, they're still going to the shows and buying art. So you have to have, you know, both.
How important is Facebook for you?
You know what's funny? Facebook started because my nieces at Christmas time said, you know, Uncle, you should be on Facebook.
How do you think
like,
we all
why?
Got on with our kids?
I didn't even know what Facebook was. I didn't know what Facebook was. I thought, they go, it's like MySpace and all these other things. And,
mm-hmm.
and I'm like, I don't need to be on that. What's that? You know, and they're like, well, you can keep in touch with us and stuff like that. Well, so I decided to go on Facebook, and I did for a very short time, but I thought it was a little bit personal. At least a lot of the people that I saw posted a lot
right.
of personal stuff, and I thought, no, this is not for me. I don't want to. I don't need to tell somebody I have to sneeze or whatever it was.
Or what you're having for breakfast.
Yeah. So, I took a break from it. I just got off of it, and the galleries were selling and doing well. I saw other artists. I would go on it and see other artists like showing off their, you know, some of their work and stuff. And it kind of clicked in my head. I go, why don't I just use it for kind of like as advertising
mm-hmm.
and kind of share my painting experience with some of the people. It's kind of like. It's a live feed.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's not like your website where your website, you know, you post a painting and then that's it. You know, if you hear from somebody, it's because they emailed you. But
right.
you could see what everybody's doing, and it's a live feed, and people are on it all the time. So I thought, well, this is cool because then I could go on a trip and I could post paintings. And so that's – I ended up going on Facebook and doing that. And it's been really good.
It's an amazing way to – let a lot of people know. And it's so funny because there's people who you don't know who end up seeing your art or seeing what you're doing. And I mean, I think it's one of the most powerful communication tools available today to artists.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh.
I see so many artists selling art directly as a result of Facebook, which is fantastic. So,
I mean, yeah. I mean, I've bought art on Facebook. You know, I mean, I recently I recently bought a beautiful painting from Mara Chastain of a chicken,
mm-hmm.
a chicken and an egg, and it was just beautiful. And there's a lot of great art on there that I've purchased. I mean, these artists are posting paintings. Some of them say they're available. Some say they don't. I think it's really important. I mean, that you let people know that they're available or where they can get the work. I do see a lot of artists posting on there, and they don't post a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. You do what you want to do, but I think there's so much potential right there.
Definitely.
And
if you're going
to
post
all your work,
if you're going to post a painting, why not include the link to where you can buy it on your website?
Whether you're going to, I mean, I also help. You know, I'm with Waterhouse Gallery in Santa Barbara,
mm-hmm.
And they're on there too. And so, if they're having a show or whatever, you know, it's a great place to announce where your show is going to be and then throw their link down on there. And so there's lots of possibilities there. I do know a lot of artists that aren't on Facebook, and they're struggling. And I'm like, why aren't you on there?
Yeah.
You know, their girlfriends are telling me, hey, or their, you know, spouses or whatever are saying, you know, maybe you could tell them about it, you know. that's not my place to tell people, you know. But I will say it here that there's huge amount of potential
mm-hmm.
to further your career using Facebook.
Well, I like your combined approach there with communication from the gallery, Facebook, your own blog, and, you know, posts that you do now. So that combined approach, I think, really gets some communication out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard you talking about blog, that you're doing a blog.
a vlog.
I never had a blog before until my girlfriend at the time said, you know, you should have a blog. And she had like five. You know, she had a lot of blogs. She's an illustrator and a very good one. And she told me, you know, you should do a blog. And so she kind of helped me along with that. I don't. I post on the blog, but I'm not that active, not as much as I am on Facebook. But it does help because there's some people that are on the blog that aren't on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I recently sold a painting off of my blog to a woman who's not on Facebook,
right.
But she was on my blog. So I
right.
said, you know, on Facebook. She goes, yeah, but I don't like Facebook or I don't do Facebook. So I'm like, okay, you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I've said this before on the show probably 100 times, but you've got your website or your gallery, and that's your store. And then you need to have all these other marketing arms that feed people in to buy your art. And
yeah.
the people that go to your blog are not necessarily the people that are going to go to your vlog if you're on
yeah.
YouTube, or the people who are going to get your newsletter, or the people who see you on Facebook. But you need all of those different avenues to push people in to find your art on your website or in a gallery. So
yeah.
It's pretty straightforward, but without all those things happening, I think there's a ton of opportunity that's being missed. So it's so exciting to me to see how well artists are doing that are actually making a concerted effort to try all these different marketing efforts. It's amazing.
Well, you have to nowadays. This you know, this environment that we're in is very fast-paced, and if you don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. You know, you have to
yeah.
be...
Good point.
Yes, it is.
You know, so you have to be on top of the art. It seems, although there were a lot of artists back in the day, but it seems like there's a lot of artists now, and the reason is because you could see them now.
Right.
Before, you couldn't see them because they were in another country, there was no Facebook, there was nothing other than
that. Or they were in another state.
or
another city.
In another state, yeah, yeah. And so now everybody's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, whoa, you look at this guy now, look at that person. You know, so if you want to stay on... in the business and stay on top of your game, and you have to be able to do a little bit of both. You know,
mm-hmm.
being a great artist is one thing, but you have to sell your work in order to survive. So, and you know, you hear complaints on each side of the coin with galleries and artists and things like that. And I think there's a way to do that and a way to stay connected to it all and still be in a gallery and still do Facebook and you know, everybody's happy. So I think you have to learn how to evolve and just, you know,
yeah.
it's still ever-changing. I mean, look at Lori McNee. She's like a top tweeter. I don't tweet,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
yeah,
I still don't know what that means to tweet. but you hear about it all the time.
Yeah.
And even my friend, when I was up staying with my friend here in San Francisco, he said, you know, you should tweet. And I'm like, oh, that's just one more thing that I should put on my list.
You know what,
to do.
Frank, you should do what I do. I set up a Twitter account and I linked it to my blog and my Facebook account. I've never gone onto Twitter, but it automatically tweets for me. And I don't
oh,
even think about
yeah.
it.
No.
And that's,
okay.
and
I didn't
just,
know that.
It's just one more thing I couldn't do, and I completely understand what you're talking about. But I have all these people who follow me on Twitter, and I forget. But it's like, oh, yeah. And
yeah.
even the Blog Talk Radio shows, they all tweet up there. So, yeah, it's one more thing. And then there's social media. It could be a full-time job for 10 people to manage your art career if you wanted it to be. So it's a little tough.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, you know, you're talking about being on Facebook, you know, and seeing my work on Facebook very frequently. But it's so easy because I carry my iPhone with me everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it takes 2 seconds to upload something that you're excited about that you want to share.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you're spending hours and hours, like, at your desk at home just staring at Facebook. You know, you're on the road. You're still able to do what you need to do. And that's kind of nice.
It
wonderful
makes it
technology.
Magical. Yes.
Yeah. I'd like to quote from one of your statements that I love. It says, when you're outside painting, you have to be completely involved in the moment. And when you're completely involved like that, all your troubles go away. I enjoy my life now because I have a lot of those moments. So many artists are afraid to paint outside plein air. What advice would you give those folks about plein air painting?
Don't be afraid.
Yeah. There's more things to be afraid of than going out and slapping some paint around.
Yes.
You know, I think what it is because they don't want to be, they're afraid of somebody looking over their shoulder and making judgments or just, you know, it's kind of frightening. Early on, I think that that changed for me, not because of as a plein air painter, because I was an airbrusher. My friend that I used to go, that I started painting with, plein air, he was big in the car business, and we used to go to car shows and airbrush T-shirts at car shows, like at the street rod shows, Orange County Cruise show at the Orange County Fairgrounds, and you'd have 50 people watching you airbrush a T-shirt.
I can see, yes.
And they're looking right over your shoulder, and they're waiting. You know, you have about an hour to put this design on a shirt. And they're just in awe and watching you. And that kind of gave us some confidence, I guess, being out in public. And so I never worried about, you know, once I was going out to plein air paint. So if you're talking about, you know, being afraid to go out and paint, some people are afraid maybe too because they're afraid of the not doing a good painting or, you know, whatever it might be. But you just don't, you can't think about that. You just kind of go and enjoy yourself. And I think that's what I look forward to. It's not about I'm going to go out and I'm going to create a painting and it's going to be a finished painting and I'm going to sell it. I don't do that. I've gotten better and I could do that now because of the frequency that I've gone out.
Right.
I pretty much can go out and do a decent painting like every single time now. And if it's one that is not so great, sometimes there's just a little bit of tweaks that I can do back in the studio or even chop off an inch of the painting and it makes a better composition or something like that.
Good point.
So I think you just have to go out and do it, you know.
And isn't it too, Frank, maybe even just going all the way out to your backyard to practice? Maybe not, you know,
well,
doing the whole big trip out to the coast to spend the whole day to get there and set up and paint?
Right. Well, I think what a lot of people think, too, is they have to do this beautiful scene. They have to go to the Canadian Rockies and do Lake Louise and this giant, you know, beautiful scene. It's not about that. I can go down the street and paint an alley. And my urban scenes, I get excited about them because they're everyday scenes that people know.
Right.
And I can paint one of those and someone will buy that off of me even quicker than a beautiful seascape.
Yeah.
Because it reminds them of home.
Mm-hmm.
More so than, you know, they can go to the beach all the, you know, at any time. But that painting reminds them of home. Or even if they just live in the same town that I do. I have a few collectors that live in my same town, and they own a bunch of my urban paintings, but they do not own many of my other paintings. So everybody has their own, you know, idea of what they want to collect. That for them reminds them of home. For other people, it might be, you know, a seascape or the mountains or something like that. It just depends.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a regional thing, too. You know, some people are more excited about those mountain scenes because they live by the mountains and they don't live in the more urban setting. So.
Sure. So, Frank, I did get someone that just sent me a question. They wanted to know when you talked about using your iPhone and posting on your blog or Facebook instantaneously, do you use the camera on your phone or do you use a good camera? Both? What do you do?
Well, no, I use the camera on the iPhone because then it's just already on the camera.
That's what I think.
On the iPhone. It's already on the list of photos in your iPhone. So you're on your Facebook, and then you just go to photo, and then it uploads from your phone. Yeah.
Perfect.
I rarely use my regular camera anymore, and I don't paint from photographs. It's super rare that I paint from a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go on a trip, and I'll leave my nice Nikon camera at home. Unless I know I'm going to Europe or, like, Alaska or something like that, I know to bring it. But if I'm just going down to the beach, I never bring it. I never. It's just using my iPhone. And I'm not – that's for a quick upload. It's not for the perfect picture that I'm looking for.
Right.
If I want to post that, I'll wait till I get home, take another picture with my regular camera, and then upload it.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about workshops. How often do you teach?
Well, that depends from year to year. This year I'm not doing that many at all. Mm-hmm. I decided to cut back so that I could focus on doing larger pieces, based from my travels.
Are all your workshops plein air?
Yes, they are. Yeah, I've done other workshops, like the ones I've done, indoors at Disney, or the ones that I've done indoors locally here by my house. Those were more about drawing. That's a huge part of what we do.
Yeah.
So we don't necessarily have to be outside to draw. So I would set up a still life where we had models come in and I have them draw. And I have to say that even painting from the model it goes hand in hand with painting a landscape because it's
mm-hmm.
still shapes and values you're dealing with. So
mm-hmm.
So the workshops I do probably about 3 or 4 a year. This year I've done one so far, and I have one coming up. But that's it. And I've done the workshops with American Artist Magazine, Weekend with Masters. American Artist Magazine prior to that had a convention, and that was, I'm trying to remember the name of that, Methods and Materials Show.
Mm-hmm.
That's what started the whole thing. And so I did a workshop with them. Morgan Wiesling did it and a few other artists. But it was not based on workshops. It was more of a convention where they had supplies and demonstrations, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you do have an upcoming workshop in August, is that correct, in Laguna Beach?
Yeah, I have a two-day workshop in Laguna Beach.
And then, do you have others scheduled? Or
Not right now. You know,
okay.
What usually happens, too, is I get requests from anywhere in the country where somebody might have an art club or a group, and they'll call me up and say, hey, would you think about coming out to, like, say, Maine or something and doing a workshop out here? And I'm really happy to do those because some of those places I've never been. And then I'm always looking for, unique spots that might appeal to me, So, and I love doing that. The one thing is I don't know those areas, so they have to set it up for me. They'll do all the logistics and get me flown over there and set me up, and then all I have to do is teach.
Yes.
So I really enjoy those. I did one in New York with the Rochester Art Guild. Great group of people, and it was beautiful. We were blessed with such good weather. They said usually they only have 1 or 2 days of sunshine, and we had 7.
Yes.
So it was like the entire workshop.
Excellent.
It was just like. Yeah, it was great. It was really great.
Yeah, sounds spectacular. So how do folks sign up for your workshops? Just directly through your website? Or
depending on which workshop. Yeah, depending on. If it's my own, they could just go to my blog. And on my blog, on the right-hand side of my blog, it lists the workshop. And it'll usually have my phone number or my email, and they can get a hold of me that way.
Very good.
Yeah, that's the way they do it with me.
Is there space available in the one in August?
Yeah, it's already started to fill up, but I still have quite a few spaces left open. I'm only taking in 12 students. I'm doing it a little bit smaller. Usually I take up to 20, but
all right.
I'm doing a smaller one.
Perfect. So as a plein air painter, Frank, you must have a good story or two you could share with us.
What kind of story?
Something. I don't know.
You guys want to get me in trouble?
No. It's just the adventures of plein air painting. I'm telling you, it could be a TV show.
All these reality shows, why hasn't there been one yet?
I agree.
There's a good point.
All these painters are always goofing off,
Or being chased by bears or something. But
I did get chased by, that's a story. I taught a workshop in the Canadian Rockies several years back, and it was June, and bears have come out of hibernation, and springtime has already been there, and now they're just eating protein and whatever they can get. And there are plenty of grizzlies around, and I had this kind of, I had never been there before, and I had this kind of fear of like turning a corner and there's a grizzly bear, It never happened during the actual workshop because we're a huge group and, they'd probably just stay away. But I went off with one of my students just on a little photography jaunt. We were up in the just past Lake Louise. If you cruise a little further, there's a place called Bow Lake, and a lodge that called the Nam Tai Ja, and that lodge is where we stayed at, which was absolutely beautiful. Carl Rungis used to go there before it was a lodge. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with Carl Rungis. He was the probably one of the premier wildlife painters back in the early 1900s. And so he went to this lodge that Jimmy Simpson was building, and that's where we stayed. And it was just really, really cool because you could look at his old paintings and see the same place. So the student and myself, we decided to go for to take some photographs, and we came up on a grizzly. Uh-huh. And the grizzly was actually just foraging. He was digging for roots and bugs or whatever they, you know, dig in, they're digging into the ground. And we were probably about 50 yards away, and then he moved further away. So we kind of paralleled him and just followed him along. And then we're snapping away, just me and him, snap, snap, snap. All of a sudden he looked up and kind of sniffed the air. And we're like, wow, check that out. We didn't know what he was doing. And then he went back, and then he looked up again, but this time he looked at us and then charged us.
Oh, my goodness.
Gosh.
Yeah, well, we didn't know at the time, but it was a bluff charge. But luckily, we were still by the lodge, and there was a dirt road, and a car had pulled up pretty close behind us, maybe 20 yards. So we know you're not supposed to run, but we figured we can make it to the car. And we just pulled it to the car. We just pulled it to the car. My glasses and my hat flew off my head. And, I mean, I didn't even care. Just like, we got to the car, and he probably had only run, like, 20 yards and stopped. And then we saw him turn around and go away. So that was the lesson learned, you know. So it's like, don't just leave them alone, you know. I mean, we weren't that close to him. I would say we were about 100 yards away at the time when we were photographing him. But you still, they just, we were in his space, you know. And you're like, okay. So then later on, we bumped into the game warden. He knew that there was a bear around because some other people had said there was a bear around. And he told me and my friend we were stupid. we should have been following him, taking photographs of him, and so. But it was a story to tell for a while, you know.
Well,
and there's plenty of others.
I'm sure. Well, I think painting at Lake Louise must be amazing. It's probably one of those places where, because the color of the water is so unbelievable, you almost have to tone it down a bit because it looks fake.
It does.
Yeah. Well, any of the glacier, like even in the Sierras are really close. You know, it's 3 hours to Lone Pine, 4 hours to Bishop. If you go up to some of those lakes that are pretty high up, they still have that glacial silt from some of the snowpack up there.
Unbelievable.
And they look very similar. But Lake Louise is something different. But I'll tell you, one of the best lakes that I've painted at was Lake O'Hara. And Lake O'Hara, if you're standing at Lake Louise, it's on the other side of the mountain.
Oh,
it's on the British Columbia side.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at Victoria Glacier, when you're sitting at Lake Louise, you just go over the top and to the other side, and there's Lake O'Hara. That's a more restricted lake. They don't let a lot of people into that lake.
Mm-hmm.
It like they count the number of people that enter that because they want to keep it pristine.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lake that John Singer Sargent painted at, and Carl Rungis. And
really?
In fact, they have a spot right there at Lake O'Hara. It's called Sargent's Point. And if you paint from right at that spot on a perfect day, you'll see the same painting that he painted that's in the Boston Museum.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, you know, it's really exciting to be a plein air painter because you're standing at the same spot that your idols have sat and painted.
Good point.
You know?
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there and you're excited. You know, when he painted there, he wrote a letter to his sister saying, oh, I can't stand this, the porcupines are eating, or whatever, you know, the raccoons are going and eating my food and doing this, and, oh, it's just hilarious to read their stories of their jaunts, you know.
Yeah,
but it's absolutely beautiful. And if I could say one more thing about, you know, the you want stories, what's nice about being a plein air painter is that each painting has a story.
Mm-hmm.
So when a collector buys that painting, you can tell them your experience, and they can take that away with them. They go, oh, it's hanging on their wall, and they're telling their neighbors or their friends, you know, he painted this over there, and they could tell the story back to someone else. So it's really nice.
Wonderful. Well, what are your experiences with plein air events then, as a different kind of venue, and how did you get started with those?
You know, I don't do many anymore.
Okay.
I think that they're good at the beginning of your career, and when I started, they were becoming very popular. It was at that moment.
Yes.
So the Laguna Plein Air Invitational, they had their very first one. You know, you had all the top painters coming from around the country, really. They had artists from Minneapolis and Missouri and places like that coming in, people I've never met before. So I didn't participate in the very first one, but I donated my time to help out and stamp canvases just to meet these people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I got more excited about doing some of those events. And I think they're great for, like I said, for your career early on, because it
mm-hmm.
gets your name out there. You get to meet a lot of great artists that you become friends with, and you can go visit and paint later on. So they're really good in that way. But after a while, I think it's good to move on to bigger and better things, and
mm-hmm.
then maybe you'll find that you want to do something different. Because
any advice for artists that are starting out to do them?
I think it's especially if you're new to the game, I think that you should do them. The only thing is these events are very short. You know, they're like a week, sometimes even shorter, and they have a quick draw event, which, you know, you do a painting in about an hour or 2 hours. That's the only thing that it's not really a true what really happens in the whole plein air world. So when the people come to see that, you know, it's more or less these people get to see what you do outdoors, but it doesn't really necessarily show the real experience. Because
mm-hmm.
None of our experiences are in that way. You know, like you paint for a week and then you put them inside the museum. That's not how we really do it. But it's great.
or in an hour.
Yeah.
Or in an hour, yeah. I mean, sometimes that is because all of a sudden it starts raining or something, you have to pack up. But those experiences are just to get people acquainted, collectors acquainted, and it's a way to sell paintings. But it's not really the true plein air experience or the just being an outdoor painter.
Yeah, of course.
I think you have to have that experience painting outdoors. Then when you go to those events, you feel a little bit more confident, too, about completing paintings. Because, you know, you're going to have to hang at least a half a dozen or more paintings in their venue and then possibly do the quick draw. And some artists, you know, maybe are not into doing the quick draw. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's excellent because for the younger, or not even younger, I'm just saying for people getting their feet wet in plein air to do those, because it gets your name known.
Of course. So what's a typical day like for Frank Serrano? And I typically know it's probably hysterical, but let's try.
Well, I'm an early riser. I don't really sleep in, which is funny because I have some friends that will sleep till noon. I can't do that. I really can't. There's so much beauty that happens in the morning when the sun rises. It's just like the painting I actually just posted on Facebook. If I didn't get down to the beach at 7 a.m., I would have never seen that. I would have just saw regular blue sky and the blue waves. But you don't get that mood in those later hours. So I get up pretty early, and I grab a cup of coffee, and then I'm off to go paint.
Do you decide the night before where you're going to go? Do you decide that morning?
You know, sometimes I decide right in the morning. I get up, and I look out the window, and if it seems pretty decent, I'll back up. Like this morning, I almost forgot we had this interview, and I was going to drive down to Laguna Beach.
Oh, my God.
No, seriously, because we did talk about it before, and I had it written down. It's sitting on my table right now with your telephone number and everything. And
oh,
I got
great.
Up out of bed. I go, whoa, it's really pretty. There's these clouds out because we've been having this kind of crazy humid weather.
Oh, the weather's
and
been
I thought,
terrible.
And I looked straight down towards the beach, and it was clear, and I thought, I can go down to Laguna Beach. I had a collector that wanted to see one of my paintings so I can make this thing. And then I'm getting the coffee, and I'm like, oh, I have an interview this morning.
Oh, darn, I have that done interview.
I have to go back home. I'm on my cell phone, so we could have done it from the road. But anyway.
That's true.
You know, I'm spur of the moment. I love being that way. And I'm fortunate and blessed, and, you know, thank God that I can do what I do. But a typical day, yeah, just get up early, grab a cup of coffee. Sometimes I stay in the studio, like right now, since I just got back from San Francisco. I have a lot of studies that I can enlarge. So I'm kind of like going through them, figuring out what I want to do. I promised some paintings to the gallery, so I have to get that done. And it's, you know, you have to write all this stuff down because I'm being spur of the moment. I kind of sometimes just want to go, oh, it's too nice outside. I just got to get out. It's hard for me to stay in the studio, too.
Well, and that brings
me... I
read that on your blog, that when you're in your studio, you wish you were painting outside. So.
Yeah. Well, it's the distractions. When you're outside and you're in the moment, you're sitting on a cliff and it's just beautiful and you're trying to capture that moment, everything goes away. You were talking about earlier about all your worries and everything. It all goes away. You're just in the moment. That's... you know, people who meditate do that, right? You know, they get into the moment by meditating. It's almost meditation. People come by and they go, oh, how relaxing. I wouldn't say it's relaxing, but it's meditative, you know?
Well, it
just
shows
puts you. Thank you. It just puts you in this zone, and you're able to get work done. There's no distraction. You know, you just do it and get it done. Some people wear, you know, music. They put the earphones in their ears and music, and that's also a way to keep people away from coming by because they can't talk to you. But I don't do that. I love listening to like if I'm at the beach, I love listening to the seagulls and the waves and all the noise because I think that all goes into the painting. You know, that's all part of it. And so if you're blasting like rock and roll when you're doing a painting, some of that influence of the rock and roll is probably going to go into your painting, which is fine, but it's not how I roll.
So how much of your work is plein air versus studio work?
Oh, gosh. A huge portion of what I do. Huge portion of what I do. I wouldn't even say it's 50-50. I would say more it's like 75 or 80% is plein air and the rest of it's studio stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I sell a lot of plein air work over large-scale paintings. It's just, I really don't think it matters how big the painting is. Just, is it a good painting, and does somebody really love it? So, I mean, I've seen some paintings that were small by some of the most amazing painters, and I would love that over one of their large paintings any day. You know, it's the nice thing about the plein air paintings, too, is it's the actual notes that the artist took out when they were outside,
right?
Doing what they do. It was edited and everything, but while they were doing it, and it's a piece of them. You come back into the studio, and basically you're just transferring that information onto a larger painting. So it's going to be a different painting altogether, because it's larger, and you have to add more stuff possibly to it and stuff. But that's why I love collecting drawings. I love collecting. I collect drawings and I collect paintings, but mostly small ones because I know it was the first thing out of the artist's hand.
Yeah.
So in your typical day, ha, 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 when do you do the marketing, computer, that kind of stuff?
I used to save a day for that, like Monday, you know, Monday. You know, Monday, and I would just do that sort of stuff. But sometimes it kind of just trickles over, and I'm like, oh, okay, now I'll remember I have to do this, or I'll look on my notes, and oh my gosh, I have to do like this morning. Remembering your radio show.
Yes.
So you've referred to this painting trip in San Francisco. I'd love to hear more about it. So you went with another artist.
Yeah, I have an artist friend, and I've made lots of good friends in workshops as well, and he was a workshop student of mine last year, and we became good friends, and he invited me up to paint in the area. He's invited me several times, but I haven't been able to go. Now I had some free time, so I thought, you know what, I want to get some San Francisco scenes done, I better go.
Mm-hmm.
And so he lives actually near Half Moon Bay, in a little kind of mountain town, lots of redwood trees called La Honda. And stayed there with him, and then we would take jaunts out to the ocean. Lots of beautiful cliffs there, just north of Santa Cruz and just below Half Moon Bay. And then from there, we drove north up into San Francisco. And I tell you, when I got to San Francisco from the coastal side, because I always came in from the inland side, like the 5 freeway or something.
Right, right.
Totally different. And just like, you know, the first painting we did was Baker Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a long, narrow piece. It was cold and windy because the fog was there. And the fog was like, it looked like it's going 40, 50 miles an hour right past you. It's like, just flying by. And so we had to wear parka jackets, you know, in order to paint there and hold on to our easels occasionally. But yeah. Well worth the experience, and had a great time painting there. And then, but I really wanted to get into the city and paint some of those scenes that you see, like Wayne Thiebaud paintings where the streets are going up and down. And,
right.
And so we finally got there, and I actually got a bit of vertigo because I wasn't used to. It was like, you know, walking up and down a roller coaster or something. And I never felt like I was, like, on steady ground or flat ground. I thought I was always on, like, a hill or a slant or something. It was kind of – I think you have to get used to it. And so after a few days, we did, and it was just – it was awesome. And it was sunny. It was beautiful. It seemed like the fog had just stopped at the bridge, at the Golden Gate. And then past that, it was all sun. So we were blessed with nice weather.
Well, the paintings you put on Facebook are amazing.
They are.
Really,
thank
really
you.
Good.
And it was probably just half of what I, you know, a few of what I did. A few of them I wanted to bring back to the studio to touch up. But I'm going to get back up there again. Like I said, my friend he's super cool, and he and his wife are just great people. And that's another thing I love about plein air paintings. I met so many people in my career that I never, ever would have met working in a 9-to-5 job.
Sure.
Yeah.
And people just, and they want you to come back, and then they invite you to their homes, and it's just amazing. Anywhere I go, it's just, hey, anytime you want to come back, you got a place to stay. It's just a great career.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Tell us a little bit about the little jewels. I'm quoting here, little jewels that you've got this section on your website.
Yeah, you know, I still haven't. That's something like a work in progress. I haven't gotten back to that. Again, probably because of Facebook being so so live, you know.
Well,
what will little jewels be?
Well,
eventually.
Not diamonds, no. Well, basically what I was thinking of at the time, and that was before Facebook, was posting small paintings that I normally don't give to the gallery.
Yes.
And I was going to post them on a section of my website with a Buy It Now button, and people could go on there and just buy a 6x8 or a 6x6 or a 5x7.
Mm-hmm.
These tiny little things that I do when I go out, when I have another half an hour or an hour to spare, I'll do another painting, and that's what I come up with. And I thought, you know, I could put them on there, and it would be a great way to sell them, because otherwise they're going to be sitting in my studio until I have, like, a studio show or something.
Right.
And I thought this is another opportunity. And I have no conflict with the galleries because I don't sell that size in the gallery.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no conflict there. And I've posted them on Facebook and then put them on eBay. So I've been able to sell a lot of these little tiny jewels, if you want to call them, that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know you've also got some DVDs. You've got one called Painting on Location that I guess it follows you around from your studio out to painting the atmosphere along the California coast and then back into the studio. And then you have another one titled Mastering Plein Air and Oil with Frank Serrano. So how can you buy these? I have friends that have them that rave about how great your DVDs are, by the way, just so you know.
Yeah, the first DVD that you talked about is one I produced myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is available through my, you can go on my blog and email me. I used to have a buy it now button for it where you could just go and it'll take you straight to PayPal or whatever. But, you know, the California taxes have changed several times. So I decided, you know, it's easier for them to just send me an email, and then I'll send them the address and the total, and then they could purchase it that way, still through PayPal, or they could send a check.
Okay.
The other DVD they cannot buy from me, it's through Interweave and the Interweave store. Interweave was the company that bought American Artist Magazine.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And they asked me to do a DVD along. There, it was the first set of DVDs, and it was after the first weekend with the Masters. Right after that, they decided to do DVDs. And so they asked myself, Susan Lyon, and Mary White, to be the kickoff DVDs for their series. And so that's available through them, the interweavestore.com. And I believe it's fairly reasonably priced. It was like $25 or something like that. So
okay.
That one's strictly through them. I don't sell those.
Okay. And what about your book? You've got a planner, painting and oil, and then I believe a second one as well.
The book was published by Walter Foster back in 2002, so 10 years ago. And
okay.
I don't have that book, and I don't think Walter Foster has it available through their series of books right now. It's only available, like, if you went on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
So you could find it on there because there's people that still want them, and, you know, they ask me if I have them. And I did sell them at one point, but then I moved on to the DVDs, so mm-hmm. I don't deal with the books anymore. So mm-hmm. they would have to... Eventually, I'll come out with another book myself, a more complete book. That book was basically for your budding artist, your very, very beginner plein air artist, and that's what they wanted. Even something that a young person could pick up, you know, like 12-year-old person
uh-huh.
that could, if they wanted to start painting, could pick up something very easy. So I would say that the DVDs, if our audience is more seasoned plein air painters, then the DVDs are a better bet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, Frank, what advice do you have for an artist who's just launching their art career?
Not to give up. It can be pretty stressful. It can be pretty disheartening sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You get the rejection from the galleries and this, but don't give up, you know. Just keep doing it. If you really love to do it, eventually things will start happening, you know. I mean,
so true.
We all go through those ups and downs where, you know, the gallery rejects you, or, you know, you thought you sold a painting and you didn't sell a painting, and then you need some money and this and that. But just stick with it and just keep painting. You know, your whole career is based on how well you paint, and if you just paint a little bit, you're never going to amount to... You're never going to get to that point where you're a successful plein air painter. You have to continuously do it. You have to be totally consumed by it, really. I mean, if you look at anybody in any career, that they just don't quit. I mean, I look at those stories. I love those books of success stories and stuff, and not necessarily painting stories, just people, like, say, a writer, a novelist who got
mm-hmm.
rejected 700 times, you know, with a book, and then all of a sudden they put a book out and they're millionaires, you know.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, it's just like you can go to gallery, 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 and then all of a sudden all it takes is one good gallery to accept your work and you're on your way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I got rejected a bunch of times. And during my career where people started to know me, you know, I would enter, say, a plein air a plein air event where you could sign up for it and, you know, give them $30 or whatever. I got rejected from those.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, how do I get rejected from that? I mean, but it's just, you know, there's a lot of people involved in what we do, and then you just have to, you know, I think one of the artists told me, you know, it's that easy saying, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So you have to keep squeaking along, you know, and eventually it'll happen, you know. And
I tell artists
who enter
exhibitions and whatnot and get rejected, I say, you know, a lot of times that's one or two people that are the jurors of that show. It's not the world telling you whether or not your art is good. It's hard not to take it personally and think that your art is bad, and it's not.
It is hard, and those are good points to remember for sure.
I've been a judge in some of these events, too, and I don't do it anymore. Well, I don't do it anymore solely because I felt that it wasn't my place to – they were – you know, and there's still a lot of artists that judge events or judge even online things. And I think it's okay to do those things if you really feel you can add or participate in something that, and it makes you feel good or whatever. But for me, it didn't make me feel good. You know, it just,
mm-hmm.
I felt like I was, it was too hard to judge so many great paintings sometimes, and mm-hmm. you only can pick one. And exactly what you're talking about, where the artists would feel, take it personally. I mean, I even had one time where I was at a a small time, I was doing a demonstration early on for an art club, and they had a little show, and they go, will you judge our show at the same time and hand out some awards? I'm like, sure. And right afterwards, I had, you know, a fella come up to me and goes, why didn't you pick my painting? And, oh, man, I was like, oh. You know, and you have to be very diplomatic and you know, just say, you know, hey, there's a lot of great paintings, but, you know, I did the best that I could, you know, maybe
Never.
Next time.
Never.
You know, so it's really tough. So I don't do that anymore just because I don't want to be in that position.
So as you look back over your own art life, is there anything you'd do differently with the choices you've made with your art?
Probably not. I don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I think that there's you can always say, hey, I could have done this better, done that better, but I made choices that have got me to the place that I am, and I have to be happy with that. And I'm very grateful for all those people that have helped me along the way too. And I just I don't think there's any room for me to worry about that.
Do you have any goals, lofty goals out there for your art?
Lofty goals.
Anything?
You know, I'm one of those simple guys. I just go day by day.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to be working.
Yeah,
I wouldn't worry about it.
I like those happy surprises that you get from day to day. You know, I like being pleasantly surprised. I used to worry a lot. You know, I used to have all these expectations, and it was very disheartening when something would go the wrong way, you know, and you're like, oh, you're so hard on yourself, you know. And so I think as you mature, you just kind of, you know, I'm a planner. I still plan things. I still, you know, make a schedule of what I need to do. But I'm also, I just love that day-to-day kind of, I'm going to do what I need to do and let things unfold as they should. You know, I have a friend he's a great friend. He always tells me, he goes, you know, the universe is going to provide what you put into it. So just sit back and enjoy the ride, you know. And I totally believe that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've had good luck with that, and I just, you know, use that.
So where do you see yourself headed for, say, the next 5 years? Or do you truly take it day by day, as you say?
Well, that's in general terms, but, you know, like if I was going to say long-term goals, I would love to have some more of my paintings in museum collections, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I don't know what's going to happen, you know, especially with our economy. I'm just trying to, like everybody else, just I want to continue what I'm doing, so I have to continue making money at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just continue going out and painting and trying to produce beautiful work that people want to hang in their home. So
great.
Well, you're doing a good job at that. You know that. So
well, thank you.
How wonderful is that? Well, I just have a list of questions that we like to ask every artist at the end of our interview, and I have to laugh because it's we've been talking now for 70 minutes, and at the beginning of the show before we came live,
it's
you said to me,
fast.
This isn't going to last an hour. No way.
What did you say at the end of the show became live? What's that?
Pardon?
What did you say about live?
Oh, no, before we started the show, you had made the comment that you didn't think we'd go an hour. So I'm so glad because it's just been a great, great conversation. So the first question
is... Well, I've had phone interviews before, you know. I actually did one with a TV station. It was on the radio, but it was so quick. They had like 5 questions and we were talking.
When you get artists talking to artists, we could go on forever and ever, as we all know. But my first question is, what is your favorite art book?
Oh, you know, I don't think I looked at that list of questions. Did you give me that list of questions? My favorite art book? Oh, man, that's really hard to say. I have so many books. Art book. That the books that really excite me are the books of works of earlier artists. So, I mean, if I could say that, that would be my answer.
Sure.
It's hard. Sure. There's lots of great stuff out there now. But when I look back at the past and look back at some of my favorite artists like Anders Zorn or Carl Larsson, I love the Swedish artists, Kreuer, and people like that. And then, you know, you look at books with Soroya. Those books kind of like, you look at their lifestyle back then, and you look at, that's all they did was just paint. There was no TV back then. There was no all these distractions that we have now. And it just, it makes me, it just makes me feel good. I just look at those books, and it kind of takes me back, and I feel like I'm back there.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. And I love looking at those books have a lot of their life progression in their art. So from when they were young to when they were older. So you can kind of relate to that, and you feel good about what you're doing because you're on that same path.
Yeah. And the second question we have here is, what is your favorite paint color?
Paint color.
That's a very difficult one.
Well, because I'm a tonalist, or more of a tonalist.
Oh, good point.
And I use a very limited palette, by the way. So, I love grays. I'm going to tell you, I love gray.
Mm-hmm.
But there's such a broad color spectrum in grays. So, but I love mixing grays. I just think I get really excited about it.
Okay. Well, I think I know the answer to this question, but the question is, do you have a favorite musician, album, or Pandora station that you like to listen to while you're painting? And
okay.
I'm kind of thinking, I don't know if you do.
Well, this is going to be probably shocking to a lot of your listeners. I don't listen to music when I paint most of the time, because I'm outdoors.
Right.
So, but when I'm in the studio, I like classical stuff, you know. I like listening. I like movie soundtracks. Because they're so inspiring sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Like if you listen to, you know, just Legends of the Fall or something, that music just, it's so bum, 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 and it's inspiring when you're doing it. So if I'm doing a mountain piece, you know, Colorado Rockies or whatever I'm doing, and you're listening to that, you kind of feel yourself in the landscape. So it's really nice to listen to that. But when it comes to Pandora and all that, I don't even have that. So, that's the technology that I don't have. I just turn on the radio or put a CD in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very good.
Good for
and,
you.
And our question four is, whose art do you wish you could add to your collection?
Oh, I love collecting. I think it was last year or the year before, I bought my first early California piece of Jack Wilkinson Smith painting. But if you're talking contemporary,
whatever, doesn't matter.
It's hard. I wish I can have a lot of these paintings that I've seen on Facebook or paintings that have been to the galleries. And my first painting was a Ray Roberts painting I bought from Medicine Man Gallery. That was the first time I bit the bullet. I just said, yeah, I'm going to go do it. I don't have, you know, I was early on in my career, and I didn't have a lot of money, and the gallery gave me 6 months to pay it down. So that was my first start into collecting. And then Clyde Astig is one that I would, we're friends, and I've been to the studio, but I haven't had a chance to really think about what I want of his. It was overwhelming when I was there. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
What am I going to, you know? So we were, a friend of mine, Aaron Shore, we were, like, just sifting through all this stuff and, you know, having a glass of wine and just talking to Clyde. And it was just, that was my fill, and I never walked out of the pity, but eventually I will. He's definitely one on my list of people to have. And I recommend that all these artists nowadays, if you have the chance, start collecting. It's a lot of people think that they don't have the funds to do it, and I didn't have the funds to do it either at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But by the galleries nowadays want to sell paintings. They're willing to make payment plans. There's no interest involved. Just send them a check every month, and eventually you have it. It's just where you want to put your money, and it's an investment. So you know, don't plan on, you know, selling it, keep it, and you love it, and eventually you pass it on to your family. It's what they used to do in the olden days, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
I try to buy a painting when I'm taking a workshop. I bought a Scott Christensen at a workshop, and it's one of those things that I treasure every single day.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and
usually it's one
at
of those,
workshop,
you get a deal.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Usually at the
workshop,
they're not framed. They might be finished, but the artist is also, you pay to go to their workshop, they're going to give you a deal on a demo.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've sold quite a few that way, but I also think that it's really something if you go to a gallery and fall in love with one of your peers or whoever, you fall in love with the work. And I have a lot of collectors in my work that I've done payment plans that way, you know, and it just makes it a lot easier. And it, you feel you, once you have it, it's on your wall, you're like, wow, I own that. It's just,
I know.
I have a piece of that artist hanging on my wall, you know, and yeah. And I think the viewers, if they, you know, if they have the chance, they see something on Facebook that they like from one of the artists that they see. Because I see a lot of these wonderful comments, beautiful, stunning. You know, if you really love it, ask the artist if it's for sale.
Mm-hmm. Good advice.
Start your collection.
Great tip. So do you have a studio tip for our listeners? Something you do
studio
in your
tip?
Studio that you think is a good
Keep
thing
it organized.
To share? Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Oh, man, I've been to studios where I just cannot work in that. It's just stuff everywhere. I have to have a clean space so I can move around when I'm looking at my painting. You know, I don't want to back up into some other paintings or things like that. But studio tip, I don't know. I'm more of a plein air painter. So,
mm-hmm. What could be a plein air tip, too? Don't forget anything. I said a plein air tip would be nice. It's probably don't forget anything.
Don't forget. Well, usually I have my backpack and it's set up with all my plein air stuff, and I usually set up the night before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just as if you would set up your luggage for a trip, so it's mm-hmm. it's ready to go. And I'll double check before I leave in the morning, make sure I got my paper towel, my tripod, and all that equipment. Yeah, it's. I think I've been on plenty of trips where I forgot something. I went all the way to Europe, Scandinavia, to paint with my girlfriend at the time. We went to see some of her family and to paint Sweden and not Norway, but Denmark. And I get there and I'm like, "Where's my tripod?"
Oh, oh dear.
So I had to. Luckily, I think her family member had a camera tripod, you know, so I was able to, they're universal, so
mm-hmm.
I was able to use that. But for a while there, I was painting sitting on my luggage. I would sit on my luggage, and I would open up my shot box on my lap and just sit on painting.
I'd like to see a picture of that.
And I'll tell you what, I mean, it was those experiences you remember, and you were talking earlier about, you know, what are these stories? Well, I was sitting on the Baltic Sea right on the edge, and it's ice cold. It was the winter time. It was like 30 degrees, and I'm doing a little painting sitting on my luggage, you know, I had like one of those rolling kind of luggage things. So I'd sit on there since I didn't have the tripod, and I put the easel on my lap, and I'm painting, and I'm freezing. I'm doing this little 6x8 trying to get it all done, and a lady walks out of her house. Now, this is not like a regular neighborhood. There's a house here and a house way over there, so they have land. It's just a beautiful area. And the Swedish lady comes out and says, "Oh, you look very cold. When you're finished, come in and have a cup of coffee and a
charming."
Like, I didn't know her from you know, I just didn't know this person at all, and she invites me into her house. So I go in her house, and her husband's there, and he brings out the coffee, and they talk to me, and little did I know that this lady who invited me there, her family started the town.
Oh,
they started the little Swedish town that I was visiting. And she gave me a history book to take home of her family.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, this is like really cool. So, you know, if I didn't look cold, maybe she would have like invited me in. But
right.
That was a great experience.
Yeah. Huh. So what's on your easel right now?
I have a foggy scene of Cambria.
Cambria.
It's a 16x20 that I did a smaller piece, and I'm trying to get some paintings to the Waterhouse Gallery in Santa Barbara. So, do you know Cambria?
Excellent. Well, I know only through references and have been close to there, but not.
Oh, yeah.
So
it's a beautiful
we
little
look forward to seeing
town.
It.
Yeah.
Will it be posted online?
It'll probably be on the Waterhouse Gallery, you know, on their webpage when they get it.
Okay.
Just have to finish it up and take it over there.
Yeah.
Well, here's our last question for you, Frank. Whose art workshop would you like to take?
Wow. Well, I think if I wanted to take from somebody, it'd be somebody that is not around anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And probably, you know, if Sargent was around or Soroya, one of those guys.
Yeah.
The question you never asked me is, like, who did I learn from? And I never, ever took a workshop from anyone. I just am completely self-taught and painted with other painters and gained a lot of experience that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because
so maybe you
too,
don't want to take a workshop.
Well,
you've never
point,
taken
I
one. Wow.
At this point, I don't need to take a workshop, or I don't really have an itch to take one. I like going to lectures. I like watching demonstrations, but I don't need to. I'm on my way already. I know what I want to paint. I know my style.
Of course.
And so I think workshops are great and they're a must for some students, but there are a lot of artists out there, a lot of students that have innate ability to just catch it right away and start going with it, you know. If I were to take a workshop, if one of these guys from the past came back around and said, "Hey, I'm doing a workshop," or you know, what's really neat is Eric with Plein Air Magazine is doing this new Plein Air convention.
Mm-hmm.
They just did this one in Vegas that I missed, but they had John Singer Sargent's
nephew or something.
Grandnephew or
something.
Yeah. That would have been really cool to listen to and hear, because I'm sure he had some experiences that were really just priceless, you know, to listen to. And I missed that. So, but anyway, that's it in a nutshell, I guess.
Wonderful.
Very
good. Frank, thank you. I'm sorry we took all your precious painting time away from you today. But we really appreciate the fact that you were on the show. And this interview will be archived and available forever, even on iTunes or, of course, on the Blog Talk Radio site. So thank you.
How cool.
Thank you. One of these days I'll meet you.
I'm honored you wanted to have a conversation with me.
Well, one of these days I hope to meet you since we're practically neighbors. So maybe I'll see you down in Laguna or something. Who knows? Or up at Eaton Canyon. I'm not sure where you paint, but.
Yeah, are you a member of the California Art Club?
I am.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yes, I have
great
monthly meetings over at the California Art Club, believe it or not. But listen, thank you so much. And Mary, thank you too. And we'll be
you
back.
Yeah, it's been excellent.
Thank
yeah,
you, Mary.
Wonderful show.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks for all your questions. That was awesome.
All right, take care.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.